Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Patient Navigator Community Call. At this time, everyone is in a listen-only mode. I would now like to introduce your host for today's conference, Ms. Julie Mobade. You may begin your conference.
Thank you. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the first Patient Navigator Community Call for Cohort 2. We are so excited to have you on the call today. So the purpose of this call is to have an open dialogue about the challenges and the opportunities you all are facing when you're starting the Patient Navigator program. So I am a member of the APC Patient Navigator program, facilitating the hospitals and setting up. And joining me also on the call today is Susan Rogers. She is our national Patient Navigator Program Manager. Shilpa Patel, who is also my counterpart in facilitating the sites and setting up the program. And Dr. Ty Gluckman, who is the Medical Director for Clinical Excellence at Providence Hospital. And Providence is also one of our Navigator sites. He also serves as our Physician Advisor for the Navigator Program. So we appreciate your participation today and joining us, and we are looking forward to an exciting and engaging conversation. So I am going to take a moment. Most of the sites in this second cohort have at least had an onboarding phone call and introduction to the program. We are in the process of collecting your baseline data and doing your assessments. There is about a handful of those sites who have completed that process. And we are also now in the process of planning your first site visit. So at this time, I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Shilpa Patel. She is going to let us know who's on the call and where which site is joining us today. So Shilpa?
Thanks, Julie. So on today's call, we have Adia Terry from New York Beth Israel, Anne Marie White from St. Vincent's Medical Center, Don Young from the University of Utah, Denise Buncor from St. Vincent's Medical Center, Diana Loveday from Indian River, Kim Marshall from University of Colorado, Christy Hills from CPMC, Karen Mishkin from Renown, Larry Allen from University of Colorado, Laura Latimer from Renown, Lori Orchick from Fairview, Mary Davenport from Baptist Health. Bear with me, the names are still coming in. Elaine Kilman from Baptist Health. Michelle Wynn from Baptist Health, Misty Harnon from Baptist Health, Nicholas Pellerin from Mercy Health, Dr. Shaw from California Pacific, Sherry Allen from Baptist Health Louisville, Susan Brown from Mercy Medical Center, Tara Tishaum from Tacoma General Hospital, Takima Brown from Baylor Scott & White, and Tom Langland from Olith Medical Center. And I think that's all that have dialed in so far that we can view. So Ty, I will pass it over to you to get started.
Thanks, Shilpa, and special thanks to all of you. I really appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to participate in today's call. Really, for the next several minutes, I just want to give you a little bit of background information, address some concerns or issues that you may have at the present time as it relates to the program. And then this was really meant to be an informal opportunity, as many of the meetings that we're going to have in this forum are intended to be, to really address problem areas that you may have in terms of metrics that you have been either wrestling with or the Navigator program has brought to the forefront for you overall. And in subsequent calls, our goal is to be able to try and create a forum where we can actually bring individuals together to potentially even address in more specific detail a limited number of topics going forward and identify who's been able to do really well in this regard and who may have areas of opportunity going forward. Many of you on the call may play different roles at your respective facilities. I know some of the facilities have numerous people on the call, and I would encourage you to have as many people on the call as possible. These community calls will be essentially phone only, but we will be having some upcoming webinars, which Julie will highlight our first coming up in mid-June at the end of today's program. The goal for today, even though we all don't have visual cues with a lot of information sitting in front of us, is to really be able to listen to one another about some of the challenges that we're going through. A couple of just updates about the program. There are 35 facilities in the United States that consist of large, intermediate, and smaller facilities, and they may range from academic medical centers to community-based hospitals that may not have a teaching program, and this was very purposeful. A lot of you have had some site visits. Some of you are in the process of initial data collection, and so you're at different places. The first cohort of sites that went through this process, of which I happen to play a role in being the medical director for our site as well, have gone through our initial site visits and have actually, in some cases, had second site visits as well. In order to have gotten into the Navigator program, all of you had to participate in Action Get With the Guidelines for data collection around myocardial infarction, but some of the sites, or many of the sites, may not have participated in a registry program around heart failure, namely Get With The Guidelines Heart Failure. And so for some of the people, and this will be highlighted in a moment, some of the challenges may have been we weren't necessarily consistently tracking outcomes related to heart failure care overall, and I want to come back and address that in a moment. In addition, each of you as part of the program, I suspect and hope, have identified a physician lead to help in terms of coordination and leadership of this program at your facility. Now, they may not be involved in day-to-day activities of everything that is going on, but I would strongly encourage you, and some may be on the call today, but I would strongly encourage you to encourage their participation as much as is possible in these calls, subsequent webinars. As many of us know, it's sometimes hard to have change occur at any given facility or site, and physician leadership can be an integral component to that overall. Those are the primary things that I wanted to focus in on. I did want to let you know that in the coming months, it is anticipated that we would be rolling out to you a instructions on how to submit your data for the metrics that are being collected into the ACC so that it actually can be reported out in a dashboard. And we're in the near close to throes of trying to put together a dashboard that more closely parallels what you're used to seeing if you're used to reviewing Action Get With The Guidelines data. So more to come with that. And then Julie will touch on this as well, there is an ongoing listserv as, if you will, a blog post opportunity where people will vet ideas, ask questions, inquire about certain things. And I think this has been an extremely helpful piece of the Navigator program, and that people who have figured out a way to do things have learned from each other. And that really is what the whole community of the Navigator program is all about. I'd like you to all be engaged in today's call. These calls work best when everybody speaks up, shares ideas. And for the bulk of today's calls, I'm going to open up the lines here in a moment, but I want to highlight some of the challenges that many of you have identified thus far as it relates to data collection for multiple metrics. And I want to tease out the fact that this is challenging, and for many facilities, large and small, you're having to go to disparate data sources. In some cases, your facility may not be routinely collecting this data, and we recognize the challenges of that, but I would strongly reinforce the importance of trying to persevere and work forward in trying to collect this data, as it's fundamentally very important. And as you'll learn on today's call, you might have been told by an IT person at your facility that it's impossible to collect this, but you'll find out from people who are also on the call that, in fact, no, you can, and your given facility can. They may just need a little additional instructions on how to do that. With that, I'm going to open up and ask Octavia if you could open up the lines so that everybody is no longer muted. And so I would ask, with doing that, if you could attempt to keep the background noise as best as possible to a minimum. If you're not speaking, if you want to mute your own line on your own phone, that might be helpful. But I want to open it up and start highlighting some of the challenges that we've heard about back from Julie and Shilpa and Susan as it relates to either the prior cohort or this cohort in terms of data collection. The final thing I just want to bring up, and I'd be remiss in not doing this, is on behalf of Nancy Albert and Minnow Walsh, who are in Cleveland and Indianapolis respectively, who form the leadership team, it's a real pleasure and honor to have all of you a part of this program, and we're really excited to have you be a part of it. So, Octavia, do you want to open up the lines? Perfect. I hear some background noise, so I take that to mean that the lines have been unmuted. And so I want to just highlight a couple of the data collection challenges. So in this very early ongoing period of time, there are a lot of you who are probably sitting on the phone saying, oh my, this is a metric that we really haven't tracked before, and it's not that it's not important, it's that we just have not had a mechanism to do this. Or we have somebody that I have no idea who they are at our institution who collects this data, we're told, and it might be related to readmission outcomes, and it may be part of the value-based purchasing or readmission reduction program at your facility or health system. Where do I get this data? And I want to assure you, these are the same concerns, challenges that people had in the first cohort and can continue to wrestle with, but we want to open this up and talk about these today. So for the better part of the next roughly 35 minutes, I want to highlight some of the individual data collection challenges that have been identified from some of the facilities. And then for those of you on the call, hopefully we'll identify perhaps what you guys have done to solve this. The goal is not to focus on any one specific topic more than another today. We will do that on subsequent community calls. As an example, our second community call, we talked about risk prediction for myocardial infarction and identifying those patients, as well as how to get people efficiently referred to cardiac rehab. Those may be topics that we want to address with this group as well, but we've identified people who had it as a problem, figured out a way to solve that problem, and then shared their learnings over the phone about what they did to make it work. And what's very cool about this is that many other institutions say, hey, I never thought about it, or we didn't do it that way, but we did it a different way. And this is really about the sharing. So let me dive in for a moment now and just talking about some of the data collection challenges that we hear about. So with regard to heart failure and MI, one of the major challenges that we've heard from a lot of people is risk prediction. So in an ideal world, and we all acknowledge the fact that we don't have limitless resources at our own respective facilities, we'd like to invest more resources in reducing readmission after a myocardial infarction, after heart failure, as much as possible. As you all know, nationally, a quarter of patients with heart failure are readmitted within 1 month, and about 20% or one-fifth of individuals with myocardial infarction are readmitted. So very scary but accurate reflection of where we stand today. And it would be ideal if we could figure out who are those people most likely to be readmitted in those respective areas overall. So that's one area, and I'm going to come back and open it up for a lot of discussion related to that. Another challenge that we heard in the first cohort and have heard amongst people being polled in this cohort is getting people referred to cardiac rehab post-MI and patients being scheduled for a follow-up appointment within 7 days after being diagnosed with heart failure. And all of us live, I suspect, in our EHR, and how to make your EHR work for you rather than against you has been a challenge altogether, but we can talk about some of the learning. And when some people will share experiences of, well, I'm on Epic, or I'm on Cerner, or I'm on Allscripts, or I'm on GE, fundamentally, it's about the process. I know that there are some people who may want to ask very specific Epic-related questions, and I would say we'll do our best to try and connect all of you offline so you can have as best those learnings as possible. Another area that's been rather challenging is to getting the patients, even if they're scheduled for a 7-day follow-up for heart failure, to get them to come back for heart failure, and even more so for the 7-day follow-up visit. One challenge that we face internally ourselves, and I suspect you all do as well, is We have some employed providers, and we have some affiliated but not employed providers. And the employed providers may be on an EHR where we can track how often they were followed up within 7 days and actually showed up for their 7-day follow-up. But there may be scenarios where we can't figure out whether or not somebody who's on a completely different EHR, whether those people followed up during that time frame overall. A big issue more and more is we all have limited resources, and although the Navigator program has been a huge help in making available resources to help with this, we need more of this stuff to be automated. And doing manual chart abstraction, data abstraction, is tiring, time-consuming, and really not an efficient use of resources. So how do you automate the process overall, I think, is a key challenge overall. And the last one, which is thematic, which is really the key of where we're going as we move from fee-for-service to value-based reimbursement, is how do we engage providers around providers of care? This includes physicians and non-physician providers of care to get them all on the same page as we move forward with initiatives, because at each of our facilities, there are areas of opportunity, and to, in a rapid cycle process, promote quality improvement, we need engagement from a team. And how have we organized at our respective facilities, our teams, to drive this quality improvement? And so with that, I want to take a pause for a moment and really open up the opportunities for everybody to speak as best you can, since we can't identify who can speak first. If you could just identify who you are, what facility you work at, and I would welcome people just sharing. This is, if you will, open mic night or open mic afternoon, and a chance for you to be able to share what specific things you're wrestling with as well. As it relates to this, since this is a little free-flowing, I would welcome that if there are people who share a problem that they're dealing with or have an ongoing process in dealing with, and someone on the call has had some unbelievable successes in these areas, feel free to also identify yourself by name, what facility you're from, and how you've been able to make improvements in this regard. Really, we have the next 20 minutes, 25 minutes to be able to talk about this. As most of you who may know me, or some of you may know me on the call, know, I don't have a problem talking, but you'd probably prefer not to hear my voice. So I'm going to turn things over to you. I don't know if anybody wants to be the brave soul, and you should feel very comfortable in doing this, to share your thoughts. Think of this as a very safe community to be able to talk about what challenges you may have. And I know you're all having them, so please speak up. Please don't be shy. Kim, I know you just because I know you from previous experience, and I hate always calling on people that I actually know. Would you mind just sharing any of the challenges that you have, and maybe that'll get the ball rolling?
Sure. That's cute. I was about to say something. This is Kim Marshall from University of Colorado, and I think fortunately we have some groups already developed and established that have allowed us to do most of the data abstractions we need, and we do participate in Heart Failure Get With the Guidelines as well. The biggest challenge was really just kind of understanding that last section of the assessment, the survey of collecting those 60 patients that we needed to address. I think some of it is really a little broad on the definition of how we might interpret some of those questions, so making sure then we as a facility stay consistent, and or do we need to better define that from the patient navigator program? I'm not specifically sure, but I would say overall, out of everything, that was the biggest challenge. That was the group of patients where we had to look at kind of their follow-up. Again, you brought up the fact, are they seen in our organization or outside where we can't find some of those answers? So that is the biggest challenging metrics I felt going into this.
And I would say, Kim, you bring up some great points, and I want to let others chat about this. I'm going to channel Nancy Albert right now and just saying the Navigator program fundamentally is not a randomized trial. Insofar of that, we're going to have apples and oranges, and we're going to have pears and grapes and every other fruit you can think of. So what works at Colorado may not work in Portland, may not work in Huntsville, may not work in Philadelphia, but at the end of the day, what we'd like to do is have a consistent cohort of the individuals that you're looking at. So if as it relates particularly to care transitions and assessments of metrics in the ambulatory setting, we recognize that a subset of your overall hospital population may make up that group, and the challenge of, well, that may be different from an ambulatory group at another facility. We just like you to be consistent. And this is more about seeing the delta in performance for your facility, maybe not completely in comparison to everybody else in the cohort, but how you perform temporally in the Navigator program. So I think to that point, we're going to entrust you all to do your best to define the population under the constraints of the groups that we've identified. Beyond that, if it involves a subset of the heart failure population that you look at for 7-day follow-up, well, keep to that same consistent group overall. And that's really what we need to see. When we do present data as it relates to the dashboard that will be forthcoming, we will be able to give you blinded data of the cohort performance and where you stand relative to the cohort. And this is really meant to help understand from a benchmarking standpoint where you perform. With all of the limitations acknowledged that a different institution's data definition and your data definition for what is that group may be different, and so there are limitations of that, the hope is to drive all of us to do better and figure out areas that we can perform better overall. So hopefully that's helpful. Anybody else have any other sharings? Anybody have challenges in getting data out of your EHR, navigating with other parts of your hospital, health system, facility in terms of getting the data out that you need? Please feel free to share them.
This is Dawn Young from the University of Utah. I don't have a specific question related to the data within, but I've asked two different people in my institution to get the CMS data for readmissions and mortality, and I got two different, I guess, responses. So I'm wondering, I was told that it was limited to what CMS tells us, and I know your time frames maybe aren't in sync with what CMS sends. Is that, has been a problem for anybody else?
I'm sorry, this is Tom Laughlin from Olathe Medical Center, Olathe, Kansas. Did you say mortality or readmission?
I think question one asked for all of it.
For all of it. Mortality, you may get different responses from different people because CMS sends out two reports. One is for value-based purchasing, and one would just be publicly reported, so you could get two different numbers there, potentially. I don't know. They use different time frames for CMS, so that may actually give you two different numbers. Readmission should be readmission, from my understanding.
But this is Cindy Cole from Central Lynchburg General. But with that CMS data, we can only use what's out there on their site. We can't, you know, manipulate the date range that really was asked for in the assessment tool.
That was my point.
Right, exactly. So we can't manipulate that. So we really would all be comparing the same numbers, basically, because we can only pull from what they give us. So we had to use what they give us, correct?
You are correct, and this is a challenge that we've acknowledged as well. For
right.
Some of the metrics as it relates to stuff that's reported back to us for by CMS is stuff that is much older than we would otherwise like. So the time frames for doing some of these analyses are going to be challenging. Nonetheless, unless there have been drastic improvements that haven't been reflected in the numbers that we get, and admittedly they're a little older than we would like, they hopefully will drive your individual respective groups to recognize that we can do better than where we are and how do we do better overall. So I think it serves we recognize in the dashboard that we're going to have discordant time frames for some of these, and this is one of those examples, and we're going to do the best that we can under those circumstances. We have heard from some hospitals they don't even know who to talk to as it relates to getting readmission or mortality data, and I would say that there is probably in this day and age of value-based purchasing being such an important thing for hospitals and readmission reduction penalties, it may require just reaching out to individuals who interface with that side for the institution to get that data. Because we have heard people say, I don't even know who to talk to. overall.
I would agree with you on that because it's like you get sent from one phone call to another, and I'm thinking someone has to know this information in this facility because it's getting reported out. But, of course, CMS can go in there and they get their tests based on claims anyway.
Yep, you're completely correct.
Mike,
other comments? Go ahead.
No, I'm good. Thank you.
Other facilities, other comments or challenges that people are going through today? And this also provides fodder or a topics for further discussion in subsequent meetings. So I want to assure you that our effort is to try and include these as topics to really do a deeper dive in later on. This really was a, if you will, a level setting and vetting session or venting session for all of you to be able to share some challenges that you have going right now. I will just highlight one other area, which was an area for us personally, and I don't know if any of you have had these challenges. When it comes to HCAHPS-related data, a lot of institutions have said they can get HCAHPS data, but it's aggregated data around a whole large population. It is important to know, and I don't know if anyone's had any challenges with this, you can filter HCAHPS data at the level of a DRG. And so either Julie Schulper or Susan can help with providing the respective DRGs that we'd be looking for. But when you actually look then at patient satisfaction data around heart failure, it's fundamentally just heart failure. And so that, I think, is a really helpful thing and was a learning for a lot of people that they didn't realize that they can actually filter at the level of the DRG. And in fact, some people who were involved with patient satisfaction, in particular HCAHPS data, at respective facilities were not even aware that that filtering could go on. Has anybody had that challenge at all?
Yeah, this is Diane Loveday from Indian River Medical Center in Florida. I found that I cannot get information from our HCAHPS collector by DRG because of the way hospital administration has decided data would be collected. In other words, from our three cardiac units, they collect a certain percent. And if you then try to filter it down to DRGs, you might have, five in the month because they're only part of the large whole. So in order to get specific DRG responses, we are going to have to order a different set of surveys.
And you bring up good points, and this may relate to the size of the institution. It's usually proportionate. So that everybody knows, especially if you're not used to doing it a lot, HCAHPS surveys can be expensive. Hospitals across the country have tended to do less surveying in the last few years than they've historically done in the past because of the costs related to them. That's a sort of a generic statement. It may not be applicable in all facilities. And the problem that you get into when you start filtering at the level of the DRGs is you get into small numbers. I personally think, and what we're doing at our institutions is looking at rolling four-quarter data for HCAHPS at a level of a DRG because you get a year's worth of data aggregated. And admittedly, rolling four-quarter, even if you make tremendous improvements in one quarter, it may not be reflected in the rolling four-quarter data overall. So I do recognize the limitations of small numbers for heart failure and MI, prevalent conditions, but small numbers, given even if you filter, well, when you filter at the level of the DRG. So I fundamentally understand the challenges that you have, and I think we're all in that same boat. Even institutions that proportionately may, you know, survey 5 or 8 or 10% of their patients, those are still small numbers, even though these are prevalent conditions that you may deal with all the time. So acknowledge that completely, and maybe offline we can talk, whether it's Julie or Shilpa that's helping to support you at your facility, to just connect you with some other facilities that may have done this better. And I think that's a lot of what, you know, Julie and Shilpa take a lot of great notes and say, who can we connect you with either in cohort 1 or cohort 2 who has done more to figure this out? I want to mention one other comments or questions and that people have. Challenges, things that you're doing really well. This is much easier than you ever thought, and it's been super easy to collect the data. I don't think we're going to get huge numbers of people saying that, but anybody have other comments they want to share?
When you talked earlier about risk stratification tools, would anybody be willing to share what they're using other than the LAIF tool?
I think that's a, go ahead.
This is Kim at University of Colorado. We actually adopted the UT Southwestern risk score and have that put into our EPIC system. So we call it Parkland because it's a little change, but we were able to adapt that tool, and with really good IT and physician support, we actually have that in our EPIC system.
Yes, this is Diane Loveday again from Indian River Medical Center. We adapted the BOOST scoring, the 8 P's for risk assessment, and had it embedded in our nursing admission assessment. And this has been a benefit to help me identify on admission.
Did you say BOOST, B-O-O-S-T?
Yes.
I think you said BOOST, okay.
And I think the nice thing that you both have brought up respectively is, A, in an ideal world, this would be automated and brought into one's EMR. And practically speaking, in part because a lot of us on the call may not have any governance control over our EHR or a part of a larger system where it can't automatically be done, and this, the Navigator program may finish before that work gets completed, the issue is how can we use point-of-care tools that may not be embedded in our EHR that may be done by nursing, by care management, case management that may be done by physicians. And I think part of this is a recurrent theme is how do we identify with limited resources those patients at highest risk. And in one of our, just mentioned, our second community call for the first cohort, Christiana, who's received a huge grant to study this in MI, still doesn't have it fully automated overall. So we may have to go back to less electronic driven resources to help us figure out who is at highest risk overall. Nonetheless, it is great to hear institutions beginning to talk about who is my patient at highest risk, and if I have a risk readmission rate of 28%, just above national average, for heart failure, how do I get that down and who's been successful? So I think this is the opportunity through the listserv to be able to start exchanging these, to pose a question out there, and then see what response you get. And I would encourage you that there is not one facility that has 100% performance or has nowhere to go because they're doing so well on every metric right now, and there's not one facility that needs to go in every direction or needs to go up in every metric. So some of us are doing some things better than others, but the goal of this is to really meet each other and figure out how do we improve in these respective metrics overall. I do want to mention one thing. There was a discussion previously in the fact that CMS, because some of the metrics related to heart failure with reduced systolic function had been quote-unquote topped out, that they were removing them as metrics that CMS was expecting institutions to track as it relates to quality performance. We have chosen to keep these measures overall. And still have them as part of the Navigator program. This question may come up if it hasn't already, partly because these are high-level performance measures. They're Class 1 recommended therapies in the guidelines, and there are still areas of opportunity even for institutions that have, or on aggregate as a U.S., that we've topped out. So that question may come up, and in some institutions have fundamentally chosen to say, boy, we have so many metrics that we have to track. If I have an opportunity to have two fewer that CMS now takes away from us, all the better. We're going to really ask you to continue to follow those metrics overall. Other comments or questions? I wonder if anybody might be able to speak up and maybe even give a couple of examples or one example of something, whether related to the Navigator program or not, where they weren't doing as well in the past. This could have been 3 years ago, 5 years ago, or a year ago, and you're really making big headway in that direction. Anyone willing to share some good early successes?
Can I talk? This is Jamal Brewster from California Pacific Medical Center. I can talk to the success we've had about our cardiac rehab referrals. When we went live onto Epic, we had a significant decline by about 50% in our rehab referrals. With the use of the patient navigator, we've gone significantly back up to probably about 80% currently. We've only had the navigator live for about 2 months. She sees every, we started with our AMI population, and she sees every AMI patient. She's educates them about cardiac rehab, outpatient cardiac rehab, and make sure that the referral gets entered.
That's fantastic. Thanks for sharing.
Uh-huh.
Others who've had similar stories, whether related to cardiac rehab or not?
And the referrals made to the cardiac rehab, are you setting an actual appointment for the patient to attend
So how it works with us is we put the order in for the referral, and the cardiac rehab actually calls them once they get they evaluate, and they speak with the physician, and then they actually call the patient and set up the appointment.
Right. I'm having a lot of trouble. My cardiac rehab nurse director
cannot
schedule the appointment without having an order signed by the physician.
So how it works for us is that we put the referral order in, which they then call the cardiac rehab department actually calls the physician and actually gets the physician order.
Okay, that's what I keep proposing, and I'll keep trying it.
Okie dokie. Good luck.
And this is Ty, and I would share that, you know, we happen to be on Epic, but we have found that the key for all of this is getting that referral, ambulatory referral to cardiac phase two cardiac rehab put in. If you have it built out as an ambulatory referral order, it serves as the order for cardiac rehab and also is something that can be tracked in your EMR system. And so we realized that was our pain point, that we weren't doing well. In some cases, it was purely education. The order existed. There's a workflow to support it, but docs, PAs, nurse practitioners, and others were not aware that this is how it was done. You have some people who say, I'm on a EMR in the hospital, but that's not my EMR I use in the clinic. And I think what's most important is to get people on a path where they're putting in that referral order before they leave the hospital. There are some facilities in cohort one who've been able in all of their order sets at the moment that they come in with an acute coronary syndrome, they come in and get PCI, they come in and get CABG or valve surgery, that as part of their order set, it's actually defaulted as an ambulatory referral order for phase two cardiac rehab. And so the default is literally 99.9%. You have to uncheck the box. Now, that may or may not be doable at these respective, at each of your facilities, but these are the kinds of things where you're trying to figure out how do I hardwire it to remove the variation in performance, and if I can't hardwire it, what's the next best solution? I will also say that it was brought up that you have an actual navigator. I do want to highlight the fact that there is going to be variation amongst your cohort, and as we merge into a larger single cohort at some point, where we're all on roughly the same timeline, you're going to find that there are some facilities who have used this as an opportunity, either from we were talking about it for 2 years and we never had the motivation to do it, and now fundamentally we're going to go and hire somebody, or the resources from the Navigator program help to defray the cost in part of this. Some people, my institution, didn't hire a navigator at all. So we have used this to accelerate, and that's the best way I can explain it, a lot of the stuff that we should already be doing, but we didn't hire someone in particular for this role. But what it has afforded us to do is the opportunity to bring a lot of people together who otherwise may have been rather siloed, didn't talk to each other. There wasn't maybe the opportunity or the excuse to bring people together. So I don't think for those of you on the call who hear that somebody's hired a navigator, I think to be successful, you don't have to have a physical navigator person identified. For some hospitals, that works better. It's more about what you do with the resources that you have. Any further comments about that? Can I ask a question that I'll pose out to the group? Have you assembled teams that are doing this work at your facility that may involve pharmacists and nurses, ambulatory and inpatients, and cardiac rehab specialists and everything else? Are those teams distinctly different for the MI versus heart failure? Are you having one big master team that's helping to solve both sets of metrics, or are you working these as sort of two parallel and in some cases overlapping conditions, but they're different people who touch them? Just be curious people's experience with that?
This is Kim at the University of Colorado. Excuse me. We actually have a very robust, well-established heart failure team that's been in place for over 3 years now, very multidisciplinary. So with that, we then just recently have worked to develop our AMI group. Some of the players are the same. We kind of do a lot of tag along. Well, if heart failure has been working on this, how can we apply it to the MI population?
Perfect. How about others in that regard that may not have had preformed heart failure teams in particular?
This is Sherry Allen at Baptist Health Louisville, and we have a multidisciplinary steering committee that is looking at both populations simultaneously.
Great. And how has, if I could just ask you, since you were kind enough to speak up, are you having heart failure specialists, or are there cardiologists that cover both domains? The challenge that we had at our institution was we have a core working group, and then we bring in physicians based upon the topics that they want to discuss. And it turns out that our MI, many of our interventionalists or people who manage acute coronary syndromes, are not necessarily wanting to talk about heart failure, even though there's a lot of overlap. And so we've actually developed two sets of sort of physician groups, and we actually meet every other month so that we can respect their time at the same time have something that's very centric to what they do. How has your experience been with that?
I would say we have that same challenge. We do have a cardiologist who is kind of our physician co-lead on this team who is very engaged and is part of a large cardiology practice that is here. We have identified the need to get some of the cardiologists from the other practice groups involved, but are finding that's a challenge just from a time resource standpoint is to get them involved.
I agree, and we're all busy, and so I think this is a big, big challenge. Other comments about challenges in engagement of, in particular, physician providers. If you don't have an established medical staff that is either the core or the entirety of your institution, how have you been able to engage aligned but perhaps not employed, or in some cases not even aligned physicians in this? Anybody want to speak to? I mean, this is a million, probably billion-dollar question about how we do change management and maintain engagement. But is this an issue for everyone? Have you found any unique ways that you've been able to engage? I know feeding people helps to have them come to meetings, but beyond that, how you've been able to uniquely engage people that may not be a medical director or have a designated position for this?
I can answer that. This is Monica from Newark Beth Israel Medical Center in Newark.
Great.
What we've decided to do this year in particular was to engage our physicians by incentives. Each strategic PI team has a physician leader, and they are responsible for the results and the outcome of that team. And we've also assigned one to our patient navigator program as well. So incentivization is something that we really think that does engage physicians because they do really work harder when they're getting paid.
No, you're 100%. And I think everybody's trying to figure out the right comp model to get people motivated, and particularly as we transition to value-based care, where value-based reimbursement, where we are paid disproportionately on our quality and our safety and performance, this is going to be all too important beyond the Navigator program. So it's a great point. Other people's comments about engagement, and I will say for those of you on the call that are not physicians, I want to acknowledge wholeheartedly that we could not do this work without you. I'm a believer that if you don't have good physician engagement, it makes other physician engagement rather challenging. And so I would encourage you, if you don't have a physician leader, to try and identify, or leaders, to find someone who is more engaged than attending an occasional meeting, because even if it's all the great work that you may do, they may be the effective communicator. They may be the person to help send out emails, increase awareness, rally the troops, whatever it is. And that's not easy work, and you need somebody committed to that. So as much as they can participate in these calls and other meetings, I would actively seek out those individuals. And if offline, whether it's myself or others, you prefer to pitch ideas of how to get people motivated who otherwise inherently may not be. I'm happy to share my two cents offline or online. Any other comments, questions, and these may be operational issues, these may be logistic issues that you have about the Navigator program. Susan's on the call who helps to lead this up, and I just want to make sure this is also the opportunity to just say, you know, when does our data have to be in? What is the expected timeline for site visits if we haven't had it? By now, each of you should be connected largely with either Shulpa or Julie. Are there any lingering questions that people have overall? Okay, I'll take silence to no. To be respectful of everybody's time, I will turn things back over to Julie to sort of talk about some other issues related to listserv, future meetings, our webinars that are coming up. And I want to, as a parting, thank you to all of you for taking time out of your busy schedule. We really are invested in making this program work. We feel that giving you back your data and understanding where you sit is going to be key with that, and we're trying to accelerate as fast as we can a vehicle to accept your data and give it back to you in a way that drives change. We would like to potentially have webinars where we actually show how to evaluate your data, but for those of you who may be used to looking at action, it'll be very familiar in an NCDR-ish format overall. But this is your program. And while I may help to facilitate some of these calls, we want the topics that are chosen, the things that are discussed, to be about what works for you. So as small or big of an ask, don't be afraid to speak up and say, we need help, because all of us do, and that's what this community of the Navigator program is about. So thank you for your willingness to do this. We know it's a lot of work, but we also – I think at our hearts believe it's the right stuff to do for our patients. So with that, thank you, and I'll turn things back over to Julie.
Would it be possible to ask one more question?
This is sure, please.
Karen Meskimen from Renown Regional Medical Center in Reno, Nevada. And when we were talking about cardiac rehab and action registry, I just wondered if anybody else was struggling with the change that action implemented this year. So you can't just count a referral order, you have to document that you've given the patient information about cardiac rehab, explained how they sign up for an appointment, et cetera. It's a little bit more complicated now because we did what you described. All of our order sets had cardiac rehab referral pre-checked. That was working great, and our percentage went from down in the 60s up into the high 80s. And now that we have to document a few extra pieces, we're struggling with that. Is anyone else having that problem?
Hi, this is Anne-Marie from St. Vincent's Medical Center in Connecticut. We actually just converted over to Cerner last year, and what we did to help with that change in the measure was developed a power note for just our cardiac rehab nurse that goes to see our patients after a cardiac rehab consult is put in. And the documentation in that that special note covers those areas. And we're also in the process of developing one for the nurses to be able to document in for the off shifts and weekends when the cardiac rehab nurse is not here.
Very good. That's helpful. Thank you.
No problem.
And Shulpa and Julie, just in your experience, and Shulpa, you've been very involved with cardiac rehab for a long time. Do you have any other additional comments to make?
I don't have anything additional. The only thing I guess I would add is that as part of the Navigator toolkit that is on the Quality Improvement for Institutions website, we do have a few resources related to cardiac rehab, so I would encourage the sites, if they haven't already done so, to view some of those resources. I know that one resource in particular a lot of sites have found valuable is from AACPR, which is a listing by zip code and location. All of the cardiac rehab facilities that are close to wherever a patient lives, and that's helped people be able to link patients with cardiac rehab facilities that are in their geographic location. So it's helped with access for those patients.
It's Anne-Marie again, and that's something else that we are in the process, if it's not already done, adding to our cardiac rehab folder is for our patients that are transferred here from other hospitals, the number and contact information for the cardiac rehab programs in their area.
And this is Ty, and I would just add is we've actually put it upon, and it's a responsibility that they've actually widely accepted. Our cardiac rehab program takes the liberty of actually connecting them with their respective closest facility. So for people that are even from halfway across the country, we'll actually work with them to coordinate who their best cardiac rehab program is. We're actually going a step beyond just providing them the contact information. We actually make that sort of connection. And this certainly in parts just within the state, we have places that don't even, they're not serviced by the closest cardiac rehab program is 70 miles away. And we talk them through this, try and facilitate home rehab for those people who just cannot get to a cardiac rehab facility. So we've been fortunate that our cardiac rehab team has taken that on. As we've gotten better and better referrals and our numbers have gone up, it's strained that effort only because we're doing a better job in getting people into rehab. So no good deed goes unpunished. So these are great conversations, and I think this is sort of the tip of the iceberg of what we can do. So if there aren't further comments, then I'm happy to have more. I'm going to turn things over to Julie just to sort of talk about some closing items, and thank you again.
Thank you, Ty. And a couple of things. The call is going to be has been recorded, so it will be archived and available on the website, and we'll let you know when that's possible. Also, I hope that everyone is able to take at least one thing away from this call, and we would greatly appreciate any feedback that you have about topics you'd like to discuss in the further community call, and any comments or suggestions, we would greatly appreciate those. The listserv is active, and if you have folks that need to be added to that listserv, you just need to let us know, and we will add them. And again, take advantage of the listserv. It's an opportunity for you to communicate with all 35 hospitals and hopefully get some valuable information and share ideas. The webinar, the first webinar, which will all 35 sites will participate, is scheduled for June 10th. And for your group of hospitals, you'll be getting the calendar appointment soon. The topic, we hope to cover an overview of data collection process and then possibly 1 to 2 navigator metrics, maybe the 7-day follow-up. So put that on your calendar now, and you'll be getting the additional information. At the beginning, I talked about where sites are in this particular group, and we are in the process of introducing the last couple of sites with their onboarding call and now planning out your first site visit where we'll actually get into the metrics, the data collection, review your baseline data, your assessment, your hospital assessment, and help you make and develop your goals and plans for your project and improvement facilities. Again, I appreciate you all joining and the engagement, and look forward to talking to all of you again soon.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for participating in today's conference. This does conclude the program. You may all disconnect.